Hey, this is Sean Tepper, the host of Payback Time, an approachable and transparent podcast on financial independence. I'd like to bring on guests to hear authentic stories while giving you actionable takeaways you can use today. Let's go. My next guest left his corporate job to pursue a career in non-food franchising. Now today, he has a network of over 600 different franchise models that can help people escape the rat race and become full-time entrepreneurs. In this episode, we talk about some of the business models, including project-based revenue and recurring revenue. We also talk about which models can generate $1 million a year in top-line revenue with 25% profit margins. And we talk about his process of finding the best franchise businesses for specific geographic locations. Please welcome John Ostenson. John, welcome to the show.
John, thanks for having me. Love the show and excited to be here with you.
Yeah, glad to have you. So why don't you kick us off and tell us about your background?
Yeah, you know, so based here in Atlanta, Georgia, wife and three young kids. And like so many of your listeners, you know, spent many years in the corporate world and had a good run post-grad school. And I got to do some neat things, consulting and then working with Carter's Oshkosh B'gosh, based out of Atlanta, a large worldwide clothier for children, and worked for the president, got stock options, got to do some neat things, but got those golden handcuffs that are hard to run away from. But after being there close to 10 years, I said, you know, I've got to do something for myself. You know, I'm tired of building someone else's empire, ready to build my own, and you know, didn't know what that looked like. And so for me, I kind of sidestepped into what I'm doing today. Had the opportunity to step in as president of Shelf Genie Franchise System. So it was still working for the man, if you will, but I had a lot more responsibility now and had the title and, you know, but got to support our franchisees all across North America. For me, that was the light bulb moment. That took place about 8 years ago. And I just saw that how franchising is so much more than just fast food. There are a lot of industries I never would have thought of. And I got to see all these different backgrounds that were participating and they got to become business owners and something that they never had experience with in the past. So fell in love with franchising. Long story short, ended up partnering with the founder of Shelf Genie. We spun off. We've invested in franchises ourselves now on the franchisee side of the table. So I've sat on both sides and, you know, continue to invest actively in franchises myself. But I've got good people that run them and allows me to spend most of my time helping others do the same to get plugged in and then take it to the next step.
Cool. Before we dive into what you're doing today, I'd like to talk about that transition moment from corporate America to what you're doing now. You mentioned the golden handcuffs. I tell you what, we have a lot of people on the podcast that they have great benefits. They've got a great 401k match and they tell themselves every day, I got to get out of this corporate job. Yet a moment later, they're like, oh, I don't know if I can give up the benefits here. So how did you, or let's start here. When did you officially leave corporate America?
Yeah, it took me a couple of years. So it was probably 7.5 years ago and had started thinking about it for a few years before that. I started talking to different private equity companies out there. You know, I wasn't sure where I was going to plug in. So I was trying to get ideas of what existed out there and where I could potentially fit. For me, it was a big step just going from a public company to a private company. That was a big change. But I would tell all of your listeners that you're in the mainstream. Those are the conversations I have all day, every day with candidates and clients all across North America that are saying, hey, you know, it's been a good run, but I'm ready to do something else. You know, there's more to it. I want to spend time with my family. I want to, you know, have a business that, that can take a lot of pride in, you know, where I'm calling the shots. Is there risk? Yeah, but working for someone else is even riskier in my humble opinion. So, you know, they're ready to bet on themselves. And a lot of times it's taking soul searching to lead them to that point. But they realize there's a trifecta to business ownership. It's, you know, not only the cash flow, which is, you know, can be equivalent to an income, but you're also building an asset that you can sell down the road. You're also able to hire your kids in your business, and you're able to realize all sorts of tax strategies that you just can't as a W-2 employee. So yeah, I love helping people have those light bulb moments.
Sure. Now it sounds like you bootstrapped it a couple of years, you said 2 years, is that right? In other words, you were with corporate America, you were kind of building a franchise on the side for 2 years.
I'm sorry to clarify. So when I first got into franchising, I was on the franchisor side. So I did not buy a business. I stepped in for the corporate side of franchising as a franchisor and ran our business supporting all of our franchisees across North America. It was after leaving the franchisor side that I did participate in now buying franchises myself as a franchisee. So I went public company, private company, and then business owner. Love that time during Shelf Genie, worked for the founder and felt like I was running my own show, even though technically I wasn't.
Got it. Shelf Genie. I'm not familiar with this brand. Can you
custom explain? Custom pull-out shelving for your kitchens and pantries. Great product. We had probably 75 owners across North America, and they were helping customers, you know, really with getting access and additional storage in their kitchens, you know, which is the room we all live in after all.
Right on. So you did that. You were on the, would you say the corporate side, franchising side, and then you want to be like an owner operator of a particular franchise?
Yeah. So served as president of Shelf Genie, supporting all of our franchisees. And then from there spun off with the founder and we became franchisees of other brands. We started buying into other brands as a franchisee. Yep.
Got it. Okay. So it's a pretty seamless transition there. It sounds like you didn't have to, for example, bootstrap. I say that because I did that, for example, with my own company. I worked for a full-time somewhere. You bootstrap something on the side part-time until the revenues are sustaining. Then you jump ship. And I like those stories because people don't go all in. They kind of reduce the risk, you could say.
Yeah. Well, in going to Shelf Genie, I reduced my salary by 80%. So yeah. Even though I went, you know, and it gave up a lot of benefits, but I believed in what we were building and then ultimately, sure. You know, spun off and went off on my own from there. So, you know, it put together some savings ahead of that, but no, it's great. And I'd say 2/3 of our clients now are getting something going on the side, what we call semi-absentee, kind of like you're alluding to, you can call it bootstrapping, yep. But it's, hey, let's keep the day job. Let's start building something, you know, in the interim that we could potentially step into full time.
Awesome. Well, that's a perfect segue. Let's get into some of the type of business models and types of franchises you're helping your customers with. So can you give us a few examples?
Yeah. You know, we work with about 600 different companies out there. So you see a lot of different industries represented, but where we've seen a lot of interest the last couple of years are in things, and I jokingly call them boring businesses sometimes. They're not all boring, but yeah. You know, that would be home and property services, you know, things from dumpsters to insulation to gutters to floor coatings. You know, it's things we're still doing some oil changes in different markets. You know, lots of interest in health and wellness, and that's a wide umbrella of a lot of different types of businesses. You know, but end of the day, where our clients are gravitating are things that people are going to spend on regardless of the economy. You know, it's the things you care about. It's your kids, your pets, your aging parents, to some degree, your homes, your health. So businesses that fall into these buckets, you know, specific examples from this past year where we've seen probably the most interest, kids soccer. We've done 7 or 8 client placements there. Senior care with kind of a unique model that's different than all the other noise that's out there in the market today. I think we've had 9 or 10 clients placed. You know, a lot in the property services arena, you know, the gutters. I think we've had 9 or 10 clients jump in there. Everyone from a Wall Street attorney to doctors to insurance backgrounds to corporate backgrounds. So a wide array that had no experience in that industry before. They said, hey, there's opportunity. Now, I just pulled the trigger myself on yet another franchise. I think I'm up to 5 or 6 now. This is a unique one, and I'm putting the locations down in South Florida just due to the demographics down there. But this is one where the franchisor is actually going to run the business for me. It's in the custom orthotics and foot wellness space. You know, we cater to kind of the senior population. So every now and then you'll have a few franchises where the franchisor will offer to run the business for you in what's called a passive model. Those are very rare in franchising. Only about 4 or 5 companies out there do it. But obviously when we do have those, our clients love them.
Right. Franchisor would be, I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, that would be kind of like the corporate entity. Franchisee would be like John or Jane Doe saying, hey, I want to become a business owner. I want that franchise. I want to run it myself.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay. All right. Can you share names, like some of the names of these franchises with us? And then we can dive into the model a little bit.
Yeah, you know, what I can do is I can describe them. The brands typically don't want us, you know, prefer
that's fine.
Giving the specifics, yep. But more than happy to share those, you know, if people reach out to me individually, more than happy to give those away. But no, you know, the senior care one, it's one where you have a founder that has been in the industry for over 30 years in the senior care space. And he said, hey, there's a better mousetrap to be had. And let's create a model that's based more on recruiting and serving as a vendor rather than the middleman. So you, as an owner, you don't have to have a large team of caregivers. Instead, you're matching up caregivers with the families, and I'm making it sound very simple here, but ultimately, and then you're processing payroll and kind of doing that piece for the family. And so just such a need out there in that senior space. You know, obviously that's a growing demographic out there. Oftentimes you're working with the kids of the seniors, you know, youth soccer, not one of our clients that wanted to, you know, that eventually ended up there ever thought they would be in youth soccer. That was not on their radar. And probably 90% of our clients come to us not knowing what they want until they see it right there in front of them. They say, wait a minute, it's a great idea. Our community needs that. I like that what the day-to-day looks like there. You know, property services, I'll just use the gutter example. No one came to us looking to get into gutters, but when they understood the financials behind this business and the culture that the founders created, so we're talking more gutter installation versus, just cleaning. You know, average franchisee in their system is doing about $1.5 million, and they've continued to grow that comp every year. And they're doing that at about 25% bottom line margin after you pay all the expenses. That's real money. And
yeah.
That may not be year one. You know, maybe that's year two, year three, you kind of ramp up to that. But when you start comparing that to what some of the corporate gigs are out there, it's pretty attractive. And that's the reason why you see attorneys and doctors getting involved. Not everyone has a 25% bottom line margin, but I would say a lot of the opportunities we work with are 15 to 20%. At this moment in time, here's another example. This one's a little bit more forward. It's not boring, in my opinion. It's a men's testosterone clinic. And this is one, gosh, there's such an awareness out there. If you look at YouTube or anywhere, I mean, every guy I know is having conversations with their doctor about, should I be looking into testosterone replacement? And this is one's quickly going to become the largest one. It's definitely the fastest growing out there in a very fragmented market. So we just have tons of clients jumping on board, wanting to be part of a first mover. And it's a clinic that does men's health with the biggest focus being on TRT. Great financial spot.
Yeah. I love the breakdown of different business models here. And thanks for giving us ideas of some of the profit margins on these businesses. Using basic math, let's say it's between 15 and 25%. Bottom line on top line revenue of $1 million. It's like, okay, so your take home is between 150 and 250. Okay, there's a lot of corporate jobs out there that don't even pay that. That's pretty solid.
And you can write off expenses. So if you're really comparing apples to apples, I mean, that's the beautiful thing. I just set up a cash balance defined benefits plan myself last week. First time I've done one of those, but essentially allows you to put a whole lot more into retirement, save it from the tax, impact today. And yeah, there's just things you can't do as a W-2.
Right. And then I look at the exit. Let's say you work on this thing for 5, 6, 7 years. And these are a lot of service businesses. So I'm thinking about, a multiple of like 2X, maybe 3X, maybe 4X on EBITDA, maybe revenue. But it's like, okay, you might have a solid payday to exit, and that might be enough to reach financial independence or retirement.
You're exactly right. In a service-based business, I oftentimes use revenue as a metric. So the rule of thumb I use is 0.75 to 1.25 of revenue, which translates to exactly what you're saying, 2, 3, 4 EBITDA for an exit. And there was actually an interesting study that came out a couple of years ago where they looked at over 2,000 transactions across a 10-year period in like-kind industries. So essentially exits of different businesses. What they found was those that were franchised traded at a multiple 1.5 times those that were not franchised. And so happy to share that study with anyone that reaches out to us.
Interesting.
But that was really eye-opening because I think, when you're paying a multiple for a resale business, let's say that buyer, there's risk involved. Even on paper, hey, it's cash flowing, looks great, there's market awareness, we've got a team in place. What if a key team member leaves the next day? What if you lose a key customer that next day? You're kind of in business all of a sudden for yourself. And I think there's some comfort knowing there's a franchisor on the sideline that you can go to for training, you can go to with questions that's got your back. So I think that's why you see that multiple higher.
That's brilliant. That's a brilliant perspective because there are systems, there's standard operating procedures. You go to corporate right away. What I need help. What do I do? We got this guy over here who's 2 hours away. He's looking for something he can fill in. Whereas you create some kind of custom business. I think on my business right away, it's a custom SaaS, like finding, if I sell this thing, it's like, there's going to be a bit of a handoff period. That's for sure.
Right. So when you sell it, you don't have the you're not having to train that next guy. You can send them to the franchisor. So,
that's brilliant. You mentioned circling back into the business models. I look at the gutter business installation. To me, it's a project-based business. Do you have any models or franchises that are more reoccurring revenue models?
Yeah, definitely. And I say large ticket transactions, kind of like you're talking about, and you've got the recurring revenue models, and a lot of clients really like this. I mean, certainly anything in the fitness realm is recurring. You know, that one I just mentioned, the testosterone one, that's recurring. The senior care that I mentioned would be recurring. Now, the only thing is senior care is you do have people pass away from time to time. So you do have to get new customers. But quite a few in the recurring arena. You know, it's such a wide spectrum. Even we've placed clients before in business coaching, just to give you an idea. I mean, that's recurring revenue right there. There are some in the property services, whether it be pool cleaning, whether it be, quite a few in the pet arena now, which is more pet cleaning or pet boarding. You know, those are recurring revenue type models. You know, certainly the youth soccer. So just kind of zeroing in on those examples I previously shared. You know, and there's some businesses where you have national accounts, you know, they've built up a large enough footprint and you're able to draft off of that. So I always have my clients, when we go through the process, let's ask the franchisor, not only what are your differentiators from a customer standpoint, but what are your true value adds? What am I getting for this royalty stream? What kind of innovation is going to be there in national accounts, proprietary product, proprietary service? You know, really wanting to make sure that, you're getting what you're paying for.
Right. But let's talk about, if somebody wants to get involved, what does that process look like? Minimum requirements? Typically, do they need to put any, like, their own personal money down, or can they go to a bank, get a loan? Maybe walk us through some of those details.
Yeah. So hitting first on the funding side, I'd say a lot of the opportunities our clients are getting involved in, when you look at the franchise fee, startup costs, and several months of working capital, is kind of all grouped in. I'd say a lot of them these days, certainly there's some very large ones, but you know, many are in the 150 to 250 ballpark from an investment standpoint. Some of our clients are using cash to fund that. Some are using maybe 50,000 of cash plus an SBA loan. I'd say typically you're putting in at least 50,000 from your own pocket. Some are using an old retirement plan, IRA or 401k. You can roll it over through what's called a ROBS program, so you don't have the tax impacts. And we've got partners to help our clients with all of these. You know, some people will use the HELOC or self-directed IRA. There's a lot of different ways to go about it that we consult on. But from a process standpoint, the beautiful thing, I'm essentially a buyer's agent. Like, think about the real estate model, you know, representing my clients. Our clients never pay us a nickel. We're funded by the franchise companies when placements happen. It's for them, it's a sales and marketing expense. So it's a very clean model. And like I said, we work with over 600 different franchise companies. What I'll do with a client is I'll get on a call. We go through some questions. We'll kind of talk through their situation. I'll give them some color of what we're seeing out there in markets like theirs. And then, I'd have them fill out a very simple profile. It takes 2 or 3 minutes. And then usually about a week later, I come back to them with the opportunities that, hey, if I'm in your shoes, here are the 10 or so opportunities I want to be looking at in your market that are available. And here's why I like each one for your situation. From there, our clients would usually narrow it down to maybe 3 or 4. And we would then make those introductions to the franchisors. And you know, they may get off the first call and say, hey, John, that one's not for me. After all, it's totally fine. We'll hit pause on it. We can always bring others back in for consideration as well. And what's so fascinating is it's usually the one that's number 4 in our clients' minds when they get on the phone that they end up falling in love with. And so it's cool to see those light bulb moments take place in real time. And where we get our validation is, you know, when the when ultimately our clients come back and buy additional locations, or they come back and buy additional companies through us, we just see that time and time again. And that's what gets us excited. So the goal through the whole franchising process is to get them as much information as possible. They get to talk to other franchisees. They get to, see the business from all different angles prior to ultimately signing that franchise agreement.
I like that part of your job a lot, because you do the heavy lifting on the analytics to understand what markets have the highest demand for this specific franchise. Because some people might be like at their end of the line with corporate America, I've got to get out of here. And they're like, I don't want to make a rash decision into the wrong franchise. Whereas you can kind of say, based on your location, these are probably some of the best opportunities.
Yeah. And not every franchise is created equal. They're good ones and they're bad ones, just like any industry out there. And you know, the lenses through which I view it, it's obviously the financial model of a business has to be there, the competitive advantages within their industry. Then I put so much weight on that leadership team. I mean, that's who you're getting into bed with. That's going to be your business partner. And the older I get, the more importance I put on the people that are involved. And so knowing these leadership teams, that's a big piece of value that we bring to the table. And then I've been very blessed the last couple of years. I have done more placements than anyone else out there. And so it gives me visibility firsthand into what's resonating with different backgrounds and why. And so I bring that in and working with the clients.
Do you work in all 50 states or close to?
We do. In Canada, yes.
Nice. Okay, very cool.
Let's take a quick commercial break. Have you ever lost money in the stock markets? Maybe you heard or saw a comment on YouTube, TikTok, Reddit, or another social platform. Or maybe you just received bad advice from a friend. Yeah, I think we've all been there. Most people lose money in the stock market because they make decisions based on emotions. What if you could remove emotions from investing? What if you could make consistent returns in the stock market based solely on logic? And what if there's a software that handled that logic for you? Introducing Ticker, a platform that helps you manage your own investments with confidence. Get started today with a free trial. Visit ticker.com. That's T-Y-K-R.com. Again, ticker.com.
And do you, based on the majority of the people you work with, would you say most of them kind of jump all in? Or do you get a good percentage that say, hey, I want to kind of do this part-time for 3, 6, 9, 12 months, something like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'd say a third of our clients roughly jump in, you know, as the owner operators. Most of them have the anticipation of running it for a period of time and then stepping back, putting a manager in place and maybe moving on to that next thing. But about two thirds of our clients would say, hey, I either want to keep my day job or keep my current business and get something going over here. And you know, that means typically putting a manager in place that you're now managing the manager. And the great thing in franchising is you've got a franchisor that's also helping with the management of that manager, that they can be that technical resource on a day-to-day basis. I am candid with my clients. I don't sugarcoat it. I say, hey, there's still a lot of work in standing up a business in that model, but franchising does make it much more doable than trying to do it outside of franchise.
Right, right. I have to touch on a fun conversation I had with Kim Daly, who's in your space. She's, yeah, I think I had her on about 3, 4 months ago. She runs into every once in a while somebody who gets into analysis paralysis mode. They just want more data, more information, and they just want to sit there analyzing for 2 months, 3 months. Well, what do you say to these people after you presented them with all the data? What do you say to them to get them off the bench and in the game, or just part ways and move on to somebody else?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I'm not going to push anyone, and everyone's got their own way of, you know, processing data. And I will say the timing is never great for buying a business. Life will always get in the way. And if you're looking for reasons, then you'll find reasons. But so many of our clients do, and we run into that sometimes too. But ultimately, I want what's right for the client. I want them to be able to sleep at night. I want them excited. You know, I do encourage them to have a couple of conversations with franchisors. There's zero commitment on their end. But I've just seen too many examples where someone was reluctant or their spouse was reluctant. Then they have that conversation. And again, the light bulb goes off. And you know, we can sit on the sidelines theorizing about businesses. But when 90% of our clients end up purchasing something that was never on their radar, until you have the conversations, you just don't know. So yeah, we're willing to do the hard work on our end. You know, if our clients are willing to jump on 2 or 3 calls, and that usually works out pretty well.
Sure, sure. That's great. Before we jump to the rapid fire round, is there one key takeaway or a bit of advice you can give to somebody who wants to become a business owner or achieve financial independence?
Yeah. You know, we see so many people out there that talk about it and think about it and explain that one day they're going to do it. And again, the timing's never right and there's always a reason. So I'd say get off the couch, go through the process. I just see too many people hypothesize and we call them wannabe-preneurs. And for me personally, I could have done the corporate world forever. Again, there's attractive reasons to stay, but I've never once looked back. I absolutely love what I do. I pinch myself every day. It's not right for everybody, but it is right for the majority of people, I would say, especially this day and age. I mean, working for someone else, who wants to do that for that long? You only have one life. I mean, get out there, you know, great, serve as an example to your kids, serve as an example to others. I mean, I was in Charleston, South Carolina all last week with a handful of guys. We're all small business owners. We take 2 trips a year. We go out on retreats and we talk a little bit of business, but we have a whole lot of fun as well. And we're wearing shorts and t-shirts and, you know, I never looked back.
Living the life. Good for you. That's awesome. This last snippet was very motivational. Thank you for that. All right, let's jump into the rapid fire round. This is the part of the episode where we get to find out who John really is. If you can, try to answer each question in 15 seconds or less. You ready?
Let's do it.
All right. What is your favorite podcast?
Outside of your podcast, I'd say Entrepreneurs on Fire with JLD. I've had the chance to go on there several times, and he's been a great partner to us. And I love catching the content myself.
Nice. I do enjoy that podcast myself. All right. What is a recent book you read and would recommend?
Yeah, The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. It's not rocket science, but great reminders. Again, very motivational. It's small decisions we make on a daily basis in every facet of our lives that really leads to those outsized compound results.
Awesome. All right, to the movie question. What is your favorite movie?
Now, I am not much of a movie guy, so I would have to go back a few years to Gladiator. Just loved, and to me, that was motivational. Loved his humble approach, and that's a classic.
It is a great film. I have to keep it in the same vein here. Do you watch like TV shows or really, you don't really watch a lot of TV at all?
Watch a lot of sports. My Georgia Bulldogs are back-to-back defending champions in college football. You know, we cheer on the Braves. So love sports. I probably watch a little more of the news than I should, but ultimately when you have three young kids, you watch whatever your kids want to watch.
That's it. Yeah.
That's probably my best answer.
There you go. All right. A few business questions here. What is the worst advice you ever received?
Worst advice would be, I think just play it safe, can blend in, do what others are doing, and I see that even in franchising. So many franchisors, so many others who do what I do are trying to just, be another flavor of the same thing. And so, again, my book, Non-Food Franchising, I'm going against the grain. Speaking to what I think people really care about. So I think just blending in would be the advice that I would stay away from.
Yes. Good. Very good. All right. Flip that equation. What is the best advice you ever received?
And this is, again, you really know me kind of on the personal side. My grandfather, before he passed away, he was a minister for many years. I said, Grandpa, what's the one piece of advice after 80 years of living that you would pass on? He said, trust God with all your heart, and that'll take care of just about anything. So that's a mantra. That's a North Star for me personally. And, I believe a lot in myself, but I believe even more in the higher power.
Right on. A lot of wisdom there. I can agree. All right. And last question here is the time machine question. If you could go back in time to give your younger self advice, what age would you visit and what would you say?
Yeah, it'd be coming out of college, out of the University of Georgia. Went into consulting with Accenture. Got to spend 6 months in India. Had a great experience, but it was putting so much pressure on myself at the time to figure out, what that career path is. And I think the advice to myself would be, just relax, enjoy the journey. You have no idea where it's going to take you, and just keep saying yes.
Awesome. All right, John, where can the audience reach you?
Yeah, come out to franbridgeconsulting.com, which I'm sure will be linked to in the show notes. Follow me on LinkedIn. I put out content on a daily basis. We've got a great tribe out there. And would love to share a copy of our book, Non-Food Franchising, with all of your listeners, free copy. So come out to our website, just share your email address. We'll get the digital copies over to you. Certainly, if you'd like to buy it on Amazon, all profits go to a great charity that we support, Hope International. So we'd love to share a free copy then.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. This is great.
Great. Thanks for having me.
All right. See you, John. Hey, I'd like to say thank you for checking out this podcast. I know there's a lot of other podcasts you could be listening to, so thanks for spending some time with me. Also, if you have a moment, could you please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review? The more reviews we get, the more Apple will share this podcast with the world. So thanks for doing that. And last thing, if you do hear any stocks mentioned on this podcast, please keep in mind, this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Please do not make a buy or sell decision based solely on what you hear. All right. Thanks for your time. We'll talk to you later. See ya.